There is no free lunch when it comes to investing, but what about a podcast that delivers educational content on investing, financial planning, items of interest, and even the odd wacky topic? Welcome to The Free Lunch, hosted by Canvas Wealth. Free Lunch will bring listeners the team's vast knowledge and experience in dealing with uncertainty. Learn more and subscribe today at canvaswealth.ca.
Welcome back to The Free Lunch Podcast with Colin and Steve, and again, a special guest this week. Steve, would you do the honor of introducing our special guest?
Well, I don't know if this gentleman needs any special introduction, but let me give a go at it. He is a former long-term partner of our previous firm and good friend of Canvas Wealth, Mr. Greg Kreminski.
Thank you. Thank you. Great to be back.
Welcome back to the show, Greg.
Thank you.
Haven't talked to you since last week.
I know. I know.
It's been a week.
It has been.
How you been?
All good. All good. No complaints. Retirement continues to work.
Yeah. It's good. So what are we talking about today, Greg?
Well, you know, for me, you know, it's been about, 7 months since you guys left your old firm and started a new independent advisory firm called Canvas Wealth. So I thought it would be interesting just to talk a little bit about, you know, what's it like, you know, after both of you and Steve have both spent prior to this your entire financial careers working with a large, you know, bank-owned firm. This is quite a divergence from that. And while what you provide clients is still investment advice and financial planning advice and things like that, it's a very different environment. So I thought maybe just talk about a little bit. How has the transition been? How do you enjoy working in a more independent environment? And
Steve?
Yeah, well, you know what? You're right, Greg. It has been just over 7 months, and it's been an interesting ride. The independence, it's wonderful because I feel like you don't have a bunch of sort of pressure on your back.
Right.
You're not being forced by any large institution to, you know, sell any proprietary products,
right.
You know, meet certain criteria for shareholders. It's really about doing what's best for the client.
Yeah. And I would sum it up to your question as it's pretty awesome.
Okay.
Yeah. Because just like what Steve was talking about, you get to do the job that you were doing the whole time anyways.
Right.
With the same people that you were doing it for.
Mm-hmm.
You just have access to some better tools in your toolbox.
Yeah.
And you have a say in what tools go in that toolbox.
So give me an example.
Well, as we all know, when you work at a large bank-owned firm and you want to do things like financial planning,
yeah,
you're given the software. This is the financial planning software that you must use.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot deviate from it.
Right.
Right? When you're in the independent space, you say, well, what's the best financial planning software out there?
Yeah.
You know, which one would work best for our clients?
Mm-hmm.
So that's just one example.
Okay,
right?
Sure.
But that's along every part of the value chain, right?
Right.
So it could be from the investment perspective, like what Steve just talked about. We have no proprietary product interest.
Yep.
There are proprietary products that we could choose to invest in, but nobody's, you know, continually showing us the benefit of them.
Right.
Right. So you're free to have your own investment philosophy and decisions.
Right.
So those are two big ones.
Sure. Now, in all fairness, just because it reflects on, you know, your and my previous experiences, despite working in those environments, even though there were proprietary products, we were never forced to use those with our clients.
True.
There was a lot of, you know, there was a lot of, as you say, subtle suggestions that it would be a good thing, but it was never forced on it. And as a result, of course, our clients didn't necessarily participate in some of those, but definitely there was that, as you say, subtle.
Let me just expand. Sorry, Steve. Yeah. I want to go back to the financial planning for a second, because in the past we would do financial plans with the financial planner that was provided by that institution.
Yes.
And what was the outcome of every single financial plan that we ever did with that planner, Greg?
Usually there was an insurance opportunity.
An insurance opportunity. So every single plan always ended up with an insurance sales pitch.
Mm-hmm.
So in our new world, Of course, we have to look at what insurance is available for our clients and they need it.
Yeah.
But it's not a sales pitch.
Right. Yep. Yeah. And that was always, you know, we always took issue with that is like we were all insurance licensed.
Still are.
We all understood the role that insurance could play in building a solid financial plan, but it's not necessarily for everybody. Mm-hmm. And I think that was one of the issues that we ran into along the way.
Yep.
Yeah. And well, and Greg, back to your point, you know, there might've been these subtle recommendations mm-hmm. by the firm, you know, to provide these sort of products to your clients. Mm-hmm. And you were incentivized.
Yes.
Financially to use those products.
Yeah.
And, you know, being fiduciaries, I think, you know, on the independent space, you really get to focus in on, you know, what's the best product out there for your client. You can't get away from fees entirely, but you can certainly look to reduce them.
So what you're talking about is a lot of those products had, if they were in a transactional type account where commissions were charged, then there could be some very high commissions associated with those new issues.
I think we did an episode a couple of years ago called Proprietary or Priority or something right. like that. Do you remember that episode?
I do. Yeah.
Yeah. And listen, I don't want to spend the whole episode here talking about those proprietary products, but they're just part of that world that we're not part of anymore.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So we're free of it. Yeah. I feel like we're free of it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So it feels good.
So you've talked a little bit about some of the, you know, the benefits for you guys as advisors. What are some of the benefits for the clients and what kind of feedback have you had from clients that have chosen to move over to Canvas Wealth? What kind of feedback are you getting and how has this move helped them?
Yeah, well, you know, we find that the online portal, some of the technology that we use today, clients love it. It gives a different view for them in terms of, you know, what sort of detailed information it provides. Yeah, maybe it's just simpler for them mm-hmm. to use, easier layout, you know, what else can I say?
Well, I mean, I think it goes right back to like in our new world that we live in now, we're licensed as institutional portfolio managers
yes.
and fiduciaries as a mm-hmm. result of that, right? Mm-hmm. And that is a benefit to our clients because we're able to access certain investment products at institutional pricing levels,
right?
Which we would never could have accessed in our old world,
right?
Right? We were still named as fiduciaries, but as retail portfolio managers.
Yes.
So that is a direct benefit to clients.
For sure.
And as Steve said, some of the reporting is just a little easier.
Yeah.
Some of the feedback. So if clients don't like something the way it's reported, well, if they tell us what they don't like, we can work towards finding a solution improving to get it
right.
better.
Okay.
You know? So at the old world, you know, if we had those suggestions from clients, what would we do? We would bring up that idea to management who would either bring it forward or not.
Yep.
And it just would get stalled.
Well, and it would have to be something that somebody believed would be relevant to all of the advisors in the firm and not just requested by one or two advisors and therefore yeah. being implemented right away. And listen, that's the nature of a big firm. I've worked in large firms prior to being in the financial services industry. As we've mentioned previously, I worked for Procter & Gamble in a previous life, and that's yeah. quite a big firm.
Yeah.
And no, you can't make changes because you think they might be better for your part of the business, unless they applied to the whole business and the company wasn't necessarily prepared to do that. And that yeah. is just the nature of large businesses.
Yeah, yeah. So the nature of this business to the benefit of the client is that, like I said earlier, we can access some better technology
yep.
that just gives us better solutions mm-hmm. that benefits those clients
yeah.
at a lower fee in yeah. many cases. And it's not like they're giving up access to anything beyond that,
yeah.
right?
Yeah. When you moved, you know, moving from, you know, having a large financial institution behind you to more of an independent kind of position. How did the clients feel? Did you find, was there any concern among clients that perhaps, you know, they don't have the same level of security that they would have previously?
Yeah, you know what? I think there's always concern, right? Mm-hmm. The Q Wealth brand wasn't very well known
yes.
in the industry. And so even our name changed from the CM Group to Canvas Wealth.
Yep.
As much as we wanted to differentiate ourselves on the, you know, when we were working for a large institution, you know, we tried to grandfather and carry forward this CM Group
yes.
name. And so transitioning it to Canvas Wealth, all of a sudden it became this, well, who is Canvas Wealth?
You know, sure.
It's actually the same team. But, you know, and then trying to understand, well, how are my assets being held?
Yes.
Like, where is the security in that? So there was always this concern, but once you started breaking it down and having a clear picture of who our back office was, who National Bank Independent Network was.
Which is where our investments are deposited.
Correct.
Okay.
Yes. You know, you understand that, well, geez, you know, when you look at assets under management, they probably exceed, you know, majority of the investment firms in Canada.
Right. Yeah.
So, you know what, it's, you know, once clients can get around that sort of understanding and safety, it's like, okay, great.
You know. So just to clarify, so the assets, you know, in our previous positions at both of our firms that we worked at were held with that bank, with that institution. Here, the assets are held at National Bank, mm-hmm. which is another one of Canada's large banks. And
yeah,
I believe they've just recently bought Canadian Western Bank as well.
Yeah. So the same safeguards, same Canadian Investor Protection Fund, mm-hmm. same Canadian Deposit Insurance Corp, all that good stuff. Mm-hmm. Same reporting requirements.
Okay.
Yeah. So, but to Steve's point, I think the biggest change for clients was brand recognition.
Sure.
Right. Because yeah, when you work at a big Canadian bank, it's easy to say, to see, I mean, you see that bank on a lot of street corners, right?
Yep, for sure.
And you can identify with it. And I won't get into anything negative about those banks, by the way. But the positives about here is that, well, first of all, we just had to inform people about the Canvas Wealth brand.
Yes.
Which was the CM Group.
Mm-hmm.
And it continues on in its 40th year of existence.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Thanks to you. And a big
thanks,
Greg.
GK. My pleasure.
And the former founders of the CM Group. And then we had to educate people on, well, who was Q Wealth,
yep.
which is providing our registration and back office, which just takes the place of what the bank was providing to us before.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And how are the investments held on deposit at National Bank as our custodian, which is just taking the place of the bank that we worked at before.
I understand.
Right. Yeah. So yeah. Because the clients that we're working with, we've worked with in many cases for decades.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so there's a lot of trust between us.
Right.
But you can also understand why somebody might question, well, who's sure. Canvas Wealth? Who's Q Wealth? Who's National Bank?
Yeah. Well, and I think the issue for, you know, many clients, being a client myself, is just knowing that, okay, well, yes, I mean, the assets are safe, you know, as safe as they were before. Now, on that note, previously, a self-regulatory organization responsible for what we did it went under various names over the years that we worked there, mm-hmm. the Investment Dealers Association, IROC, the Investment Industry Regulatory Organization of Canada, and now CIRO. Is your registration the same, or are you registered differently? Mm-hmm. And what kind of requirements or protections are there from the basis of how you, as a portfolio manager, are regulated?
You want me to take this one or do you
yeah
want me? Okay, so in our old world we were registered through CIRO, who would then register us with each of the provinces.
Yes.
In our new world, we're just registered directly with the provincial securities commission.
I see.
Right. And we're held to a higher standard.
Okay.
As that institutional portfolio manager.
Right.
So it's not easy to become, first of all, it's not easy to become a portfolio manager, right. whether you're at a bank-owned firm or not, right? Yep. You have to, we all know this, you have to take certain educational requirements, you have to have so much experience, you yep. have to be approved by a board, et cetera. You've got to continue on with continuing education requirements to keep up your status. And in our new world, it's even a little harder, right? Because mm-hmm. it's just, the licensing goes directly with the Securities Commission.
Mm-hmm.
So there's lots of, obviously, background checks and work history,
yeah,
et cetera.
Yeah. Okay.
Did I get that?
Yep. Yeah.
So from a regulation standpoint, the clients are not only are they in the same hands if they're clients that you've worked with previously, but they're in safe hands because the same regulations and even stricter requirements are made of you in this new registration.
Well, I think so too, because when you get registered at CIRO, let's say you're just an advisor. Let's not go to the portfolio manager designation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you get hired as a rookie wealth advisor or whatever,
yes.
right? You're actually licensed as a salesperson.
Yes.
You don't have fiduciary duty,
mm-hmm.
right? So then you move up the chain and you become a retail portfolio manager, which requires some form of fiduciary duty.
Yes.
But in this world, as institutional portfolio managers, we actually have to be fiduciaries.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You cannot be anything else.
Right. So in the CIRO world, for somebody, as you say, who starts out as a new advisor or what have you, there's a suitability standard that they need to live up to, which is, you know, you have to ensure that, you know, the investments are suitable for the client based on everything you know about the client's personal situation. But as a fiduciary, there's a much stricter requirement to only act in the client's best interests,
yeah,
to avoid conflicts of interest, to disclose any potential conflicts of interest, fee transparency, things like that. So, mm-hmm. you know, we've talked in this podcast in the past about the difference between a fiduciary and a non-fiduciary.
Yeah.
And so in your new world, you're fiduciaries for every client, regardless of whether the client does transactions or whether they're in, you know, model portfolios, for example.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So, you know, tell me a little bit about the, you know, the move itself. Like, because one of the things that, you know, I moved firms with the CM Group. And of course, one of the things that is always interesting is that people believe, or some people believe, that there's some sort of ownership of clients, mm-hmm. you know, and so like, well, the firm owns the clients or the advisor owns the clients. And that's always kind of rubbed me the wrong way, mm-hmm. kind of frosted my buns, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. There's those old sayings coming back.
Because nobody owns a client.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, clients, individual investors are free to, you know, to choose to work with whatever advisor or whatever firm
they choose to work with.
As you went through this process, did you run into any concerns that, oh, these are clients of the firm, or, you know, these clients, some suggestion that the clients shouldn't be free to move wherever they wanted to? And I guess the reason why I ask is, this is maybe this example isn't exactly the same, but I was thinking about, you know, my wife likes drinking Coca-Cola.
Oh, I thought you were going to stop at my wife likes drinking.
Yeah, drinking Coca-Cola.
Okay, Coca-Cola.
And I won't even say my wife likes Coke, because that could be taken the wrong way.
Yeah.
She likes drinking Coca-Cola, and she particularly likes a Mexican Coca-Cola, so Coca-Cola that's made in Mexico, and because they use cane sugar rather than some of these artificial sweeteners. So I generally shop at our local Safeway, and I'm a customer of Safeway. But Safeway doesn't own me. And if they're out of stock, or if they're sold out, or they don't carry Mexican Coca-Cola, then I'm going to take my business elsewhere.
Yeah.
To another store where they offer the product that I want.
In Tijuana.
If you have to. You know, so, but it's kind of like, so... Yeah, I frequent Safeway. I'm their customer, mm-hmm. but they don't own me. And if they fail to provide me what I'm looking for, then I don't stay as a customer of theirs. And, you know, even though it's maybe a stretch, but I think of that the same way as, you know, with investments. You know, clients, you know, choose their investment advisors for a variety of reasons. Either they were introduced to them because they were previously at a firm that, you know, and you're introduced as a new advisor. Or they came over with the advisor who originally identified the client and was able to offer solutions to the client that they felt were valuable and were willing to move their accounts, you know. And so as I say, this concept of ownership, really, it's really more one of relationship. Mm-hmm. I think who has the relationship with the client. And so as you were talking to clients, I'm sure there were some clients that decided they would rather stay. Maybe for some reason they felt more comfortable at the previous firm, mm-hmm. you know, and I'm sure a number of clients, you know, moved with you. So how did you manage that process?
You want to take that?
Well, I agree with you, Greg. You know, this is more of a relationship thing with our clients. And you're right. I don't think anyone owns a client.
No.
I think at the end of the day.
It's almost offensive to think of it that way.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think at the end of the day, it boiled down to trust.
I was just going to say trust.
Yeah. It boils down to trust that we have our clients' best interests at heart. What we're doing from a planning perspective, from a financial perspective, or from an investment perspective, those are things that we've done our research on, our due diligence, and have indicated, well, great. These are the things that will focus on the things that will get you to that point that you need to get to, whether you're leading into retirement or in retirement. And the relationship just builds from there, and it's all about trust.
Yeah.
So over the last 7 months, and I'd say over the last, 25 years that I've been in the industry, A lot of our clients have been with us for that for a long period of time, and they just trust us.
Yep.
So when we decided to make the move, it was interesting, the amount of support that we received from our existing client base. And sure, there are some clients that decided, listen, it's maybe I'm just not at that point of wanting to move anymore.
Sure.
Right. And I absolutely understand that.
And I think, and to my point, I think that's the strength of this business is like, it ultimately it's the client decides,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and it's our job or your job, not mine anymore, you know, as advisors to earn that trust in the first place, keep that trust and continue to be offer that. And then in the end, mm-hmm. the client will decide, okay, which are the most important factors to me in deciding where mm-hmm. to have my investments.
Well, as Tim Noonan pointed out years ago, trust is like oxygen. It's mm-hmm. like air. It's required.
Yes.
Without it, you have nothing, right? Yeah. And so when we did launch Canvas Wealth, the clients that came with us, to which was a majority of the clients, and I even don't like the word client, yeah, by the way. Don't.
Yes.
I'd almost prefer a word like friend or mm-hmm. some sort of even family member, really.
Yes.
Because those people we've been serving for so long, we know so well, that for most of them, it wasn't even a decision.
Yeah.
It was just, well, how do I do it? Where do I sign? Mm-hmm. How do we get the investments to you?
Sure.
And to the bank's point of view, yes, they always try to wrap their arms around their, what they call clients.
Yes.
And
which by the way, is totally understandable.
Totally understandable. Yeah. And they'll try to sell multiple products to make it harder for people to leave those mm-hmm. types of relationships or institutions, right? But they've also done things like, you know, they'll make people sign things like non-competes or non-solicits.
Yes.
To try to demonstrate to the courts, perhaps, that the clients are the property of the institution, mm-hmm. which the courts would then say that the clients have the right to choose where they want to choose.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And they're not the property of anybody
no.
but themselves.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, that's interesting, you know, and again, having been through one of those moves in my career, yeah, it was interesting to see how clients made their decisions, you know, and as I say, we always totally respected somebody's decision to stay behind if they wanted,
yep.
you know, and that was entirely up to them. And mm-hmm. if they could find an advisor that offered them the kinds of services that they were hoping for, then
great.
That would be great.
Yeah.
So great. What else? What else can you tell me? Now, one of the things that, you know, is different about being in an independent firm or setting up an independent firm as you did, is like, there's a lot more stuff you have to do other than just manage the investments. Like yeah. you're running a small business. Tell me about that.
Yeah. You know, I found it interesting when we decided to go down this path, we get to be incorporated, mm-hmm. right? We own the business. That mm-hmm. was something that would never happen on the other side because it would admit that, you know, that financial institution was giving up ownership of mm-hmm. those clients. So here we own the business and everything that comes with being a business owner.
Right.
So, you know, maybe costs are important to us.
Yep.
Right. Mm-hmm. The amount of overhead that we're paying.
Somebody has to order the paper clips.
Someone's got to order the paper clip and the toner.
Yeah. I need the coffee cream in the fridge. Yep. Like things like even a couple days into starting Canvas Wealth is like, we need garbage cans.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I've never thought about purchasing garbage cans in my life. Mm.
Literally.
Yep. And coffee like, mugs.
Yeah.
And utensils for the kitchen.
Yes. Yeah. 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 No, it's true. Everything you do is, you know, is your responsibility. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. If you're out of something, you better go fill it up.
Yep.
If you need something, you better go order it.
And, uh-huh. and what I love about it though, is we actually have that control. We mm-hmm. get to decide what that looks like, mm-hmm. right? What the mugs look like, what the utensils look like, mm-hmm. what the dishcloths
yeah.
look like. Mm-hmm. And I love that, right? Mm-hmm. Like this is ours. We own it. We, you know, we get to live and breathe it every day.
Well, it's an entrepreneurial spirit that not everybody has. You know, there are a whole lot of advisors, probably myself included, that, you know, felt comfortable working at a larger firm where all of that stuff was taken care of, mm-hmm. you know, and there's a cost, you know, that goes along with that. And, you know, you decide whether or not the cost is worth it for the comforts, let's say, of having that done for you. But it takes a different type of person to, essentially strike out on your own and be entrepreneurial and start a business of your own. So congratulations on that.
Thank you.
Well, thanks, Greg.
Because it's a change, and it's something that strikes me that is happening more and more. You know, as we've talked on previous podcasts in the United States, the independent channel, the RIAs, the Registered Investment Advisors, that channel is very large right now. Mm. You know, relative to, you know, the size of the other side of the market, which would be what they call, you know, broker dealers or investment firms. But it seems to be a trend that's happening more and more in Canada. Canada always tends to be a little bit behind the US. So are you finding that? Are you meeting people in the independent channel that maybe 10 years ago there wouldn't have been so many?
Well, 10 years ago, this option wasn't really available to us either.
Right.
Right. And there's been a lot of development in Canada that is, as you say, slower than the US.
Yeah.
In the US, there's been trillions of dollars that has left bank-owned broker dealers and gone to the independent firms, mm-hmm. to newly created independent firms, right? And when Steve and I talk about it, we look at the landscape, we truly believe that we are at the forefront of this movement in Canada.
Yeah.
And that there will be a lot more independent firms coming up.
Yep.
Coming from bank-owned broker dealers.
Yep.
Because even when I run into people downtown that we used to work with at our various firms, mm-hmm. you know, they always ask, well, like, how is it? How'd you do it?
Yeah.
Right. What's different, you know? And it's fun having those conversations with them.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Now the trade-off is that sometimes you got to give up something, you know? So yeah, Steve, we went independent. We get to make business decisions as business owners. What do we give up? Well, we gave up a pension, mm-hmm. right? And I'm not convinced that a lot of people would be okay just to give up their pension to go right. independent. Mm-hmm. That's a trade-off.
Sure it is.
Right? You give up some of the security, mm-hmm. you know, because if this doesn't work, well, there's nobody to backstop us.
That's right.
Right? Yeah. Well, there's let me back that up. There's people to backstop our investments. Our investments
are safe.
Of course,
yes.
But personally speaking, like Steve and myself, it's us.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
If you're at a bank-owned firm, there's a big bank behind you.
That's right.
Right. So maybe I'm going down the wrong path with this.
No, well, but these are all very valid, you know, comparables, mm-hmm. right? And when you make a decision like you did, it's like, okay, well, what are the pros and what are the cons? And, you know, and do the pros outweigh the cons, mm-hmm. you know, and that's really a decision that you guys made and hopefully it works out exactly the way you projected.
Well, and I want to be clear, like, we looked at all of those options, the mm-hmm. pros and the cons, and we realistically sat down and said, how viable is this option for us? Like, what are we literally willing to give up? Mm-hmm. Because you're right. There is security working for a large bank-owned firm. Mm-hmm. You know, they'll compensate you. They love to distribute shares to you,
sure.
right? To stick around. And for me, that was, you know, being enticed to stick around just for that share or that, you know,
security,
security and financial compensation just wasn't enough for me.
Yep.
And, you know, based off my age, which is, you know, turning 50 this year, you know what, this was the time to do it.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So I'm glad I did it. Every time I wake up in the morning, I look in that rearview mirror and it just keeps getting further.
Yeah.
Further
yeah.
behind.
Well, and I think the way I'd answer that question, and we're going to run out of time here shortly, but is at what cost is happiness?
Yeah.
And, you know, there is a happiness factor that is present in our team today.
Agreed.
That didn't exist 8 months ago.
Yep.
So, yeah, it came with some sacrifice around pensions or restricted shares or whatever.
Yep.
Yeah, it came with some hard work to get this up and running.
Yeah.
But it's present now.
Yep. Well, listen, congratulations on everything you guys have accomplished so far, and I'm sure you'll have tons of success in the future. Thanks for sharing.
Thank you.
Thanks, Greg.
Thank you for listening to the Free Lunch Podcast hosted by Canvas Wealth. To subscribe to this podcast to get more realistic insights on investing or to connect with one of our talented partners, please head on over to canvaswealth.ca. We'll see you next time on the Free Lunch Podcast.
Financial planning services are offered through Canvas Wealth. Portfolio management services are provided by Q Wealth Partners, a registered portfolio manager, investment fund manager, and exempt market dealer. Canvas Wealth is an owner and partner in the Q Wealth Partnership. The information discussed in this show, including any opinion, is based on various sources believed to be reliable, but its accuracy cannot be guaranteed and is subject to change. The opinions expressed in this show are opinions of the individuals and do not represent the opinion of Q Wealth as a firm.